News Talk on demand. Interruption-free audio. Where you want it, when you want it.
Happy Sunday, and welcome to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Jay Thomas. With me, like always, Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice, beautiful Sunday again. Wow, we get the good days for our garden show, don't we?
It's going to be a beautiful week.
Yeah.
I see in Saskatoon there's a couple of
27s
coming this week.
However, that's like 27 for about 20 minutes at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's not 27 you know all day.
It's still, the evenings, I've been working in the yard until the sun goes down, basically until it's too dark. And the evenings have been beautiful. Like yesterday was a bit, pushing up against the wind a bit.
Yeah. It was windy. Yeah.
But anyways, not like they're having out in the Maritimes right now. They're doing definitely some tree pruning.
Oh, yes.
Out there.
Yeah, mulching, not just pruning.
Yeah.
Mulching, down.
They're down.
They're getting turned into lumber.
Giant trees are laid right over.
Yeah, so. It's a pretty sad situation what's going on there. So I guess we've got nothing to complain about with a little bit of a windy day, right?
Absolutely.
When that far east part of our country is looking at some pretty intense stuff going on
But a great time. This basically got our, we're down to the last nitty gritty for pruning maples and birches and pines. So
okay.
If you need to get them pruned. With the weather the way it is, it's a great time to do it. So, and they have time to heal up and they won't bleed next spring. So you need to get that done. And also, remember, we're getting close to the end of September. Also remember September 1st was the day that the elm ban came off for elm trees. So you can prune all your elm trees right through to April 1st, right?
Okay.
So from now until April 1st, you can do all your pruning. So, if you're going to be doing some pruning yourself or you need to book some guys, because they're all the arborists are pretty busy during the wintertime, pruning elm trees for all the municipalities and that, because that's the only time they can do it.
Well, in fact, they were downtown pruning the elm trees on my way into work this morning on Spadina Crescent in Saskatoon.
That's
all elms along there, and the crews are out. So.
Well, you got to remember, like even the cities, they try to get to every tree at least once every 7 years, right? So you can imagine how many trees there are in your towns and cities and everything else. And so if you try to get around to it every 7 years to keep them clean so you keep, the prospects of the beetle not being attracted to your tree by keeping it healthy, keeping dead wood out of it, everything else. Well, you have to, now they say they're trying to get around to them every 7 years. So that means that there's a lot of work.
No kidding. Yeah.
So, and the same thing with your own trees. I mean, if you keep them, healthy and pruned and there might be this branch that you couldn't grow a garden because there's one branch is hanging right over it. Well, now's the time to look at that to get it pruned off if you got the elm tree.
Right. Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
It's kind of been cool over the evenings. I haven't lost any plants yet. Everything's been out of the deck. It's still going. I can't believe it.
But with that said, now is the time if you have any tropicals left outside.
Yep.
Succulents, you want to be bringing them inside now, at least for the night. During the day, if it's above 10 degrees, you can leave them outside. But bring them in at night, or it's a good time, do a single spray outside with Endol right now, and then bring them in right after that single spray. And then you want to do 3 treatments of Endol at least.
Hopefully you started that a couple weeks ago already.
Yeah, but if you haven't, it's not too late to start either.
Absolutely.
And do 3 treatments of Endol. Usually if I'm bringing them inside, I'll put them like in a bathtub or on a tarp or something so I can get a good spray, get the overside and underside of the leaves done.
Even just take them out on the driveway and just lay them over on their side hose them down and wash a lot of the bugs off and stuff, right? Get some of the dust off from outside and get some fresh and cleaned up.
It's a good time to do some pruning on them too. So usually cutting them back about a third, or at least if you have any buds or blossoms on them, trimming all those up because those are what's going to hold all the buds on them.
I can't do that.
And some of your
and you're hibiscus. I'm thinking about you.
I can't. I've got there's 25 or 30 buds on it that's ready just to blow up. I'm not going to cut them all off.
And also some of your spring bulbs you put out, your dahlias, your begonias, those kind of things. I mean, they can still stay out there. You're still enjoying them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because you can let a light frost basically knock the top down, but make sure that the bulb doesn't freeze, and then you can bring your bulb in. And that way, all the energy goes back into the bulb, and then you have better flowers and better start for next year.
So those ones can handle maybe like a cold spell of maybe -1, -2.
Yep.
But anything colder than that, we should start digging them up if we're getting that cold temperatures, and then bringing them inside. You can lay them on their side on a piece of newspaper, kind of like what you would do to your vegetables that weren't ripe yet, and then let the stalks dry back down into the bulb, and then you can store those for the winter.
And last thing is that fall bulbs. Right?
They're out.
They're still out. They're
okay.
Still getting all the stories. You get your tulips, your daffodils, your crocuses, and all that kind of alliums.
We just did a YouTube video on how to plant. We've been getting so many questions on how to plant your bulbs too. So maybe if we have time, this show, we can go over a little bit about how to plant bulbs as well.
Well, we're going to go over to the phone lines right now because they're actually stacking up. We've got a couple texts, some early birds, in on the text line as well. Tannis in Saskatoon, Marion Watrous. But first, we're going to go to the phones. We're going to go to the first call up out to Mooseman right now and talk to Dave. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning and welcome to fall.
Thanks.
Well, I got a question for you this morning. It's not for me. It's for a friend of mine, Levi. And he kind of lives off the grid a bit. He doesn't have a radio and, he doesn't have a phone, but I think he's got a radio. So his question is about pumpkins.
Yes.
Okay.
He's got quite a little growth of pumpkins there, but we got that killer frost the other night and they're turning very slowly. They're almost still green. And I just wonder, he wonders if... can you speed it up at all now that we're going to have some nice weather? Should you pick them and put them somewhere or just leave them on the vines?
As long as the leaves are still good, still green, you can leave them on the vines. And then what you should do is if you want to speed them up, is in the evening you put a frost blanket over them, right? And you could even leave that frost. If you get the white one, which lets the light through, you can actually leave it on during the day as well. That'll speed them up huge because if you keep that nighttime temperature warmer, they'll ripen way faster right now.
Now, one of the things with the pumpkins is you want to make sure that the frost doesn't hit them. That's really important, or else they'll go mushy. So if you think that you can't cover them and the frost is going to hit them, then I would pick them.
Yeah.
But instead of putting them in a dark spot, put them in a place if you have like access to a greenhouse or somewhere you can have them put out like all grouped together and then have them exposed to the sunlight. They will definitely ripen a lot faster than if they're in the dark.
Well, he's down in Sedley, and it's kind of country style where he lives, so I don't know if he's going to get around to that, but he did say the leaves turn black, so he's probably just going to maybe just hope that, they do turn a little bit in the sun, but maybe he'll pick them and put them up by the driveway or something.
Yeah, if you put them up the driveway, that way he can throw a sheet over them for the nighttime if he can, and then in the daytime they're out in the sun, and then they'll ripen way quicker.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to try and talk him into that and see if he'll do it just for himself.
Okay,
perfect.
Good luck, Levi.
You too. Thanks, Dave. Take care. 1-877-332-8255. Great call there. That's funny. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Paul and Tanya. Hang on, guys. We're going to get back to your calls as soon as we get back from this. We're going to be talking about getting plants prepared for winter, watering them in. That's one question from Paul. And hostas. Tanya wants to know more as well. So we'll come back with those questions in a minute. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. This is Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Good afternoon. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Jay with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. This is Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. All right. We've got lots of stuff to talk about today. We're going to talk about possibly taking care of some bulb stuff we talked about. Maybe we'll get into that. We might just have somebody ask us that question. You never know. We do want to answer some texts here shortly, but we've got lots of calls to get to. 1-877-332-8255. That's where you can join the conversation. We've got Paul waiting patiently, Tom as well, but Tanya has been waiting on the phone the longest right now, and she's in Saskatoon. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You want to talk about hostas, is that right?
Yes, I do. We just recently, about a month ago, moved into a new home in the university area. We don't have a very big backyard, and there's a lovely raised flower bed where the previous owner had planted some beautiful grasses. It's gorgeous, but there's probably about half a dozen hostas. And they're tiny, and they look like they've been just eaten by something. And I don't know what to do. Do I just rip them out and replant them? Are those savable? It's also a south-facing backyard. That's the other thing.
Yeah, most likely those hostas have been eaten up by the slugs this year.
Because
they have bigger bites out of them, that's definitely what they have been. The reason why they might be small is if they're in a raised bed, the winter kill might be getting them a little bit, so it's setting them back in order to get them started. So if you just...
It also depends how much they were watered.
How much they are watered and fertilized.
You said you're in the university area?
No, there's not. There's no trees there.
Okay.
So
okay. Perfect.
Do you have an area in your yard where you have a little bit more shade?
In the front yard, yeah. Like it's not a very big yard. Yeah, because they're kind of a shade liking plant, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. So what you could do is it's not too late to dig them up and move them this fall if you want to, or you can leave them in the bed for the winter time and move them in the spring. You might find you have more success with them growing a little bit more in the shade. Like I said, they might be just stressed a little bit too much. Maybe they're not getting enough water in that area, so they're not growing fast enough. If you are keeping them in that area, depending on how long they've been there, just giving them some more water and fertilizer will definitely keep them growing, and then you can kind of fill that area out
And then check in for the slugs next year.
Yeah, next year.
Right. Okay, do I cut them down for the winter? Sorry, I'm not
a
gardener.
I would leave the hostas up for the winter just because they're a more tender plant, then the snow can kind of catch them. But honestly, with the hostas, you can do it either in the fall or the spring, either or. Just wait until the leaves kind of... if the frost hits them and they lay kind of flat on the ground, and then I cut them back.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Thank you so much. Have a great day, guys.
You're welcome.
Thanks, you too.
1-877-332-8255. We're going to keep going with the calls because we've got lots of people waiting here. Let's stick in Saskatoon and talk to Paul this morning. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, you guys. How are you today?
Very good.
Do any of you have problems with maple bugs? Oh, my goodness. They're just inundated with them. Oh, crazy.
I think there's pockets of areas that are full of them.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I've got lots of maple trees here. So anyways, I've got two quick questions for you. I have my water barrels are full now.
Yep.
Now, can I put those on the pine trees or?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. I was a little bit worried about keep them away from the apple trees, though, right? It's too late.
A little bit too early. I like putting mine on the apple trees and that. I'll put them up and I'll put them on, you know, around the middle of October, right?
Oh.
And just give them one last watering. Right now, a lot of the trees, I just want to, you know, and even your pine trees, if you probe the soil and you find there's adequate moisture there, just let them sit, okay? But we've had there's a lot of areas of Saskatchewan that's been pretty dry. So, I mean, what you want to do then is just, if they're dry, give them a watering right now and then give them one last watering in about 2 or 3 weeks from now, a good watering. But if you probe the soil with a piece of rebar and you find there's adequate moisture, just leave them for another couple of weeks and then take your rain barrel water at that point in time, because, you know, you'll get it before it really starts to freeze, and then give them one last good soak then.
Awesome. I've got raised beds here, and I really haven't done anything to them for a couple of years. What are your suggestions to, like, revitalize them? Because
they flowers or vegetables?
Vegetables.
Vegetables. To revitalize them is just using it like organics, like using a compost, depending on, like, I had that question.
If you're doing root crops, you really want to watch how much compost you're putting in, because you don't want too much in there. But if you're doing leafy crops, adding some fresh compost in every year. And then if you're having trouble with moisture, I'll always add some coco coir into my garden as well, too. Alfalfa pellets are also a great thing to work into your garden, too, to give it some nice micronutrients.
And especially if you find that your raised gardens, a lot of people have a straight topsoil in them, and then they go rock hard, right? So working that compost in them and working some of that organics in there will make them so they won't be so hard next year.
Well, I've always put leaves and stuff like organics in there, and so it's nice and soft and fluffy, except my tomatoes were small this year. So I figure the nutrient value is going down on them because they are stuck in a bed.
Yeah, then just add an organic fertilizer that has all the micronutrients in them. Because you got to remember, with tomatoes, you don't need a ton of nitrogen and everything else. You need some, but you need the calcium, you need the magnesium, you need the boron. Those are the kind of things that are going to give you the taste and give you the healthiness and the size of your tomato.
And with a raised bed, just like container gardening, water and fertilizer is so key. Your planter boxes are going to dry out a lot faster than if they were just in the ground. So just make sure that you have that kept up.
Consistently, consistent water.
Well, I have a 50-pound bag of alfalfa pellets, so I'll fill it up.
That's perfect. Because also it retains moisture as well, the pellets, right?
Yeah. Perfect. Okay, thank you so much for your time, you guys. Have a great weekend.
Have a great
weekend. You too, Paul. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
1-877-332-8255. We're going to keep going with another call here, and then we'll get to the text line after that. Out to Choiceland right now to talk to Tom. Hi there, Tom.
Hi there. I phoned in before. There's these little flies that are flying around in our house. They're just tiny. They come in through the screens. If you open a window, they even come through there. And people are saying, well, they're fruit flies or whatever. I don't know, but they're just little tiny, and they're flying around all over in the house, and it's not like we got fruit out all over, but they're coming in here, and I'm just wondering what a guy can do to get rid of them little ones.
Yeah, you got house plants or little plants around your house?
Outside.
You got nothing inside?
No.
Okay. Because a lot of times, right this time of the year, the fungus gnats are moving in too, right? And so are they just tiny little black flies, like little ones?
Oh, tiny, tiny. You can hardly see them.
Yeah, the fungus gnats are all moving inside. So, but you don't have any plants, so that, I mean, they're probably just hanging around your place, like your sink and those kind of things where there's some moisture. Is that where they're sort of hanging out?
Yeah, they like the moisture.
Yeah, they like the moisture. So that's a fungus gnat. But so what you can do is if you want to catch them, is you lay a little tray of soil. Like get some potting soil or something like that with peat moss based, right?
Yeah.
And lay it down and they'll go and land on that. And then what you do is you put you can put little sticky traps in it, those little yellow sticky traps. And then you also they'll start laying eggs in there, and then you can lay a slice of potato on top of that the soil.
Uh-huh.
And what happens, the worms will come up to the potato, and then every couple of days you check the bottom of the potato, and you'll see there's worms on there, and you can take a spoon and scoop the ones on top of the soil just underneath that potato, and then you start again, put another piece. And if you have people that are listening, if you have houseplants, that's a good way to just put a piece of potato on top of your houseplants too, and with the sticky traps, you can get rid of them that way.
And just a bowl with some saran wrap on it, stick some holes in there with some apple cider vinegar. They love that
they
as
love
well,
too.
How about just a regular fly trap, like a regular sticky fly paper trap?
That's what
that will catch the adults.
That will catch the adults. In his case, again, in Tom's case, there's probably no larvae anywhere, right? Because he's got no plants.
But even if you take a little tray of soil and then stick some sticky traps in it, the soil, they'll be attracted to that soil right away. Because they'll go for the moisture, then they want to lay some eggs somewhere.
What you want to make sure they're not doing is then finding an area that is wet, like maybe some drain that doesn't get used very often or something like that.
Okay.
And they'll start hatching their eggs in those areas. And then you'll turn the water on one day and poof, you'll have a bunch
of then flies. I asked you last week about the hollow potatoes, right?
Yep.
And you guys were saying about the watering.
Yep. Got to be consistent in the moisture.
Huge. So I asked my mother about it, and she says she doesn't water potatoes at all.
That was probably exactly why it happened this year, because we had a really wet early spring, and then it went really dry in the summer. So that inconsistent watering with them is what did it this year. So if we let Mother Nature sometimes take its course, then depending on the year, you'll have a different crop of potatoes.
So you should water them then, or what?
You need to water them, but you just need to water them consistently.
Because she said she's never watered her potatoes, never.
Yeah, well, then she probably even gets a smaller potato as well, right? Which is fine, but it'll be a consistent potato. So it all depends on what area of the province you're living in, too.
They don't need a lot of water, but they do need water.
Because she did say that the purple potatoes and that, they're not hollow. It's just the one kind. I think she said, was it the white ones? Or I forget what kind she said. They're the ones that, and the rest aren't hollow.
Yeah, some of the other varieties are a little more susceptible to doing those kind of things than other ones. So, yeah, just in your wherever you are in your area, you'll just have to do some experimenting and find out which potatoes do work best.
Yeah, and I guess maybe she should start watering them.
Yeah, absolutely. Even a couple times. Even if you water them once a month during the summertime, that's a huge one, because it'll make a big difference for the plants. If you don't have availability of water, if you can somehow get water to them at least once a month, and then that'll sustain them.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. We got to run. Take care.
Have a good weekend.
You too. 1-877-332-8255 is how you join the conversation. We're going to take a quick break. News update for everybody right now. Then we're going to get back to Tannis's text, Marion Watrous, Greg in Regina. Who else? Sally in Roster and Bernie's in Saskatoon. So lots of texts coming up. We'll get to that as soon as we get back. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. This is Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Looking at a pretty fabulous week ahead. Welcome back to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. I'm Jay Thomas with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. And yeah, I mean, I think summer is just, I mean, I know technically it's fall. Yeah, I know. And look at the colors.
Look at the colors.
It's beautiful.
I was just looking at all the colors.
We actually took a drive out to our family cabin, which is at Walk-a Lake, yesterday. And man, it was just about the perfect day to go.
Yep.
I should say kind of Friday and then Saturday, but, Like, the colors are just spectacular right now. Another week from now, there won't be nearly as many leaves in the trees. And, you know, they'll still be color, but they'll start to see some more of the brown. Right now, it's that mix of green, gold, orange, red,
I think, all of it. I think this week with the temperature, I think you're going to see a little extended time.
You think so?
Because we don't get the real frost at night, right? The hard frost.
No, not at all.
So I think we're going to see a great fall colors this fall because of the temperature, how long it's going to stay.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely.
I'm excited for that.
Yep.
Because that is the best part of fall.
I love the fall colors.
Too many years so have gone by where we've gone from like summer to winter very, very fast. Yep. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's just been fine, a week of color, and then boom, it's, you know, what we'd call winter.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see it sort of drag out that way.
And one of the things that we usually miss in the garden center is I find that the changeover and getting the fall mums out and changing your gardens. A lot of other climates, they have like that four season container, but we're starting to put mums out on pumpkins out on our doorsteps and changing out our fall decor as well.
Yeah, we just get a little a fall display out at our front gate and put some bales and some pumpkins and some mums. Although we have a bit of a hill that goes down to our house, and yesterday in the wind, all of a sudden every once in a while there's a pumpkin come rolling down the hill.
That's funny. Very good, very good. Okay, let's go to the text line for a second here. This is Tanis, who's in Saskatoon, one of our first texts this morning. Sorry we took us a little while, Tanis, to get to this. She says, I've got a heliopsis for many years. I've got a beautiful large clump of them. This is the first year they've been infested, totally infested with red aphids. I sprayed them off numerous times. They were always back in less than 24 hours. What's the best way to control them? What can I do for next year?
Yeah, well, heliopsis is a fall sunflower, which really popular this year. One of the things that you can do is when they first grow up, spray them. Usually you'll start to see the aphids come out sort of first week of June is going to be the worst. So spray them with Endol and then have an integrated pest management. So be watching them every 10 days. Remember, aphids are born pregnant, so you got to kind of be on top of them. The other thing you can do is the heliopsis, when they first come up, you can give them a trim right off the bat. Once they set their buds, you don't necessarily want to trim them, or else you're going to lose your flowers for the season.
Right.
So you can trim them right off the bat, but that's basically the only thing that you can do. You can also plant some companion plants, like maybe some marigolds, some basil, maybe even some pepper plants nearby. I know in greenhouses, aphids love peppers. And so you can plant some of those other plants, and then the aphids will be attracted to those other plants, so they'll leave the heliopsis alone.
Okay.
Yeah, just knowing the life cycle of an aphid, you know, laying eggs in the fall. In the spring, those eggs hatch and their aphids are pregnant already. They're asexual. And so then after that, they don't lay eggs anymore all summer. So they just give birth now to pregnant aphids. So you can imagine the generations, how quickly they go. So keeping on top of the beginning of the season is huge for the end of the season to be able to keep on top of it.
Also
with perennials,
you can cut them down in the fall or the spring. With that one particularly, you may want to cut it down in the fall and then just clean up the extra.
And then also don't forget, a lot of the garden centers now are getting into things like ladybugs and praying mantis and those kind of things. You can always put lead into your yard. And then those are the things. And also putting a bird bath of some sort around, in the, especially first thing in the spring. And then you attract and putting some wren houses out, little bird houses, and you attract all those birds. And it's amazing how much those birds eat. In my last acreage I had, I hadn't sprayed there for 10, 12 years because there were so many birds around. They're just jumping from branch to branch to branch, eating those insects like crazy. So there's a lot of ways you can do to attract it. And they love water. And if you give them a place to nest, you'll attract them.
Okay. All right. Hope that helps you out, Tanis. We're going to go to the phone lines right now. We'll get back to the text line in a second, but waiting in Saskatoon is Dave. Hi there, Dave.
Oh, hi.
What's your question for us?
I have the garden real problem. It's just as hard as a rock, and I understand cedar mulch is one way of loosening it up. Are there other, why cedar? Can you use other mulches?
I use cedar because it doesn't break down as quick, right?
Oh, okay.
But you can use other mulches, absolutely. I like cedar because it has a natural preservative in it, so it tends to stay there a bit more. And also, for Saskatchewan, I like the pH of cedar. right? The pH, and you can use pine as well if you can find some pine mulch as well, because the pH is a little bit lower on it, so then it helps lower the pH of your soil, which also makes your plants do better as well, because a lot of our soils are more in the alkaline type of soils, right?
Yeah, I've got a lot of... I think it's clay in our yard. So.
And also using some gypsum. You know, if you want to use a mixture of both of them, that'll help break it up lots.
Oh, okay. The other thing, I have a Honeycrisp apple tree.
Yes.
And it's getting to the point they're starting, they've, in the last few weeks, I'm getting some real color to them. What's my best bet as far as storing them for at least part of the...
Well, Honeycrisp, you can store them in the fridge. They'll store for like 2 months in the fridge. So if you have a crisper or something like that in the fridge, you can store them there. And if that somewhere cool, and they'll keep for a long time. Honestly, they will.
Oh, okay. I've got a cool room in the basement. So. Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're stacking them, trying to make it so you can stack them so they're not touching each other, they'll last a lot longer that way too.
Oh, okay.
Or, Dave, you can cut them up and make them into a pie and drop one off here for us.
We would love that.
You've never seen my cooking skills.
I guess we should have asked about that first.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Dave. Take care.
Okay, bye.
1-877-332-8255. Okay, let's go to the text line. This is from...
I love apple crisps. Too, you know.
Apple crisp?
So, you know, apple crisp.
Apple crisp or apple pie?
If you can't make a pie, you can make apple crisp a little easier.
Yeah.
Well, the apple crisp, you're guaranteed to have the perfect crust every time, right?
There are families out there that have like a secret recipe for pie crusts, though. Yeah,
I know. I think we should have like a pie making competition one year at the store.
You should. That would be great so as a fall thing.
Yeah.
Bring your, you know.
And the three of us can be the judges.
Yes. Sunday morning, Garden Talk is live on location.
Plus, Dutch Growers sells clothing. So when we need new pants after that, we're set.
We're set. Okay. I'll have to bring in a men's line for you, Jen.
Yeah, I think so. Let's talk to, we'll talk with Mary's text here. She's from Watrous. I have a huge hydrangea that I'd like to split some off to give it away. I don't know if you can do that. What's the best way to split it off? Can you split a hydrangea?
Sometimes you can split them off, but hydrangeas don't split that raw. They root by taking cuttings. Okay.
Yeah.
So even taking a slip in the spring and sticking into water and new growth, or putting it into a little Jiffy 7 and some rooting hormone. So that's how they get started, is by cuttings that way. By splitting them, you sometimes can split a branch off. You can get some root with it. But the stem is made so that you're not really, you're actually, when you rip it apart, you'll actually rip the main part of the tree apart. It's like going down to a trunk almost.
Yes.
Right? So it doesn't really work that well on the hydrangeas. So.
If you're to move them, your best time to move them is when they're still dormant in the early spring, though.
Things like mock orange and all, they have different type of root system, and they're easier to make ones off the side, but hydrangeas are a little tougher that way. So a cutting, whether it be a softwood cutting or taking a cutting and putting it into a jar of water or something like that and get into root, is probably the best way to do it.
Or visit your garden center, and if you want to give one away, pick up a plant for your friend and drop it off.
Yeah, hydrangeas aren't that expensive.
No.
Usually about $30 to $40, you can get a beautiful plant.
Exactly.
And there's so many new varieties out there. I mean, I picked some beautiful ones just yesterday. They're just like almost like a cone shape and almost like a pinky red, and it was quite something.
Cool. Yep. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get to Greg's text, as well as Sally in Rostern, Bernie in Saskatoon, Nikki is near East End. We'll get to those as soon as we get back. 1-877-332-8255. You're listening to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Zooming towards the end of the first hour of our Garden Talk show today. Can't believe it's going that by this fast. Beautiful Sunday, and thanks for joining us here in Garden Talk. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke, and we've got lots of texts to get to. We'll get to those as quick as we can, but the calls always get to go first, so we've got a couple people waiting. Ready to go, guys?
Here we go.
All right. Doreen will be up in a sec, or Doran, pardon me, but Ken is in Wawota right now and wants to talk about ash trees. Hi there, Ken.
Hi.
What's your question for us?
Yeah. You're right, Jay. It's the fastest 2 hours on the radio.
That's by quick.
I've spoke with you, Rick, in the summertime after that bad storm we had here in June. It broke off a tree.
Yep.
And I thought it was a maple tree, but I don't think it is. It's maybe an ash. I'm not quite sure what it
could be.
What it is, but if it's an ash, it sprouted all those new branches just coming out like thick like hair on a dog.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if it's an ash tree, when would be the best time to prune off those new branches? I want to prune and get one or two good leaders going up now.
Yeah, you can do that any time now because the ash are starting to turn color now, right? The leaves are starting to turn color on them.
Boy, I can hardly hear you, Rick.
Yeah. Can you hear that better? How's that? The ashes, what you want to do with the ashes, you can prune them any time now. It wouldn't be a problem. So if you want to choose which one you want, you can prune it, not a problem.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. All right. That's good then. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ken.
See you guys again.
Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
1-877-332-8255. Okay, we've got Wendy coming up in a second here, but we're going to go to Regina right now. And is it Doran? Is that correct?
Right.
Okay, hi there. How are you?
I'm pretty good. And yourself?
Good. You want to talk about coleus, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, what's the question?
I have some coleus plants, and I was pinching off the flower, and I think I left. I kept doing it too long, and now my flowers are big on them. But some of them are still blooming and so on. And I think I'm going to be too late. I'm trying to get the seeds for next year.
Yeah, so with the seeds, you can leave them on the plant.
Pardon?
With the seeds, you can leave them on the plant until they've dried up a little bit. And then you can kind of harvest. Some people will stick a bag over the top of them. But a lot of the coleus plants, they are actually done by rooted cuttings. And so that's the best way. So taking the plant inside the house and taking a cutting off of them and sticking it in water and rooting them, that is the best way to produce a new plant. Because if you had a hybrid coleus plant that you maybe bought in a basket stuffer section of a garden center, that is done with a cutting, not with a seed. So some of those plants are going to be sterile and you're not going to get anything out of the seed. If you bought them in maybe like a four pack or
I bought the package. I did the seeds myself.
Oh, you did them from the seed yourself.
Yeah,
okay, then you'll be fine.
Coleus is here like you wouldn't believe.
Okay, amazing. Then you can collect the seed off them definitely if you want to do them that way. So I would just even around the flower, you can even just put a little mesh bag around them and collect them that way.
And what you can do if you want them to ripen quicker to flower and everything else is then in the evening, just cover them up in the evening because the evenings are going down below 5 degrees.
Right.
And take that cover off during the day because even this week we're going to have pretty warm weather, right?
Right.
And so that'll help. It'll just help them to mature quicker, okay?
And what about pollinization on them? I've never, ever seen a bee near them.
Yeah.
And, they're at my other plants, but I've never seen them go to my coleus.
Yeah. So what you can do then, if you want, you can, with any flowering plant that you're not sure about, you can be the bee. So you can take a little some Q-tips and go from plant to plant, flower to flower, and cross-pollinate.
Okay.
And that'll help a lot, too.
But just remember, that only helps with hybridizing them. With coleus, they don't really get any fruit or anything like that on them, so they're just grown mostly ornamental,
right,
for the leaves.
Yeah.
So I don't have to do that then?
No, you don't.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. So it's just to get them so that they're dry, and that's it. Will they? If I bring some in the house, will that...
You can definitely bring them into the house. Some people will even keep coleus as a house plant, too.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But the seeds, will they continue? Will they die in the,
Yep, absolutely. As long as you give them bright light.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Doran. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
1-877-332-8255. We're going to squeeze one more call in. We got a couple minutes here, about 3 minutes to go. Wendy's in Saskatoon. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning.
Morning. Your question's about poplar trees, is that correct?
Yeah, I've got Swedish aspen trees against the fence in the backyard.
Yep.
We had to take 4 of them down this year because the leaves have gone, they've just disappeared, they're dying.
Yes.
And the remaining three, there's 7 there, the remaining 3 are getting fairly sparse as well. And driving around the city, I'm noticing that there's so many other poplars and that kind of tall leaf, fast-growing trees. They're all dying. I thought ours were old.
Yeah,
but
it's the problem is the birch is a poplar borer. It's an insect that drills into the trunk of the tree.
Okay.
And then also what happens is it basically stops the sap from going to the top of the tree, and the top of the tree dies. Okay. And so the only way you keep, and you see a lot of the trees, first of all, those aspens, the leaves are turned, they'll be chlorotic. So they'll be like a yellowy green color, you know. So what's important about to save an aspen especially is to basically keep it healthy. So you've got water and fertilizing every year, adding nutrients to the soil. Okay. Cause those are big trees and they take a lot of nutrients, to keep them growing that way. And if you keep them healthy, boars will choose a non-healthy tree before they'll choose a healthy tree every time. Okay. So the boar is attracted by stressed trees. So if you don't keep your tree healthy, then the boars will be attracted to them.
Got it. So there is no possibility of the leaves coming back to the tree.
No, you got the boar in them and they'll be done. Now, what you may want to do is you may want to think about putting in something, a tree called a parkland pillar birch. They're not as susceptible to that. And they're a narrow tree as well.
And fairly fast growing.
Yes.
Fast growing as well. Okay.
They are.
Hey, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's the number you can call is 1-877-332-8255. That's where you can call and you can text us. We're going to take a quick break. We've got a news update coming up for everybody right away, but we're going to get to, let's see, Greg's text coming up. We've got Sally and Roster and Bernie in Saskatoon. We're going to get to these as quick as we can. Lots coming up your way. Right now, a news update for everybody. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Well, I think it's texting time here in Garden Talk. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. We've got tons of texts that are rolled in at 1-877-332-8255. So here we go. We've got Greg in Regina. This is the first text we've got. Our new sod in the front yard has got some dead yellow spots from our dog, Nixon. What can we do to get rid of them and get it green again?
Sod in the front yard with a few yellow spots. So you can add some fall fertilizer on it. It may be yellow just because maybe you didn't get enough water during those hot spells. So making sure that you're watering it enough is really important. And then you can also, you can just fertilize. You can overseed those areas too in the fall, which really helps. We were getting some warm weather this week. So right now would be a good time to do it.
You got to do it this weekend if you can overseed, basically. Otherwise you wait until the middle of October and then you put your seed down there. Then it won't, germinate and then germinate first thing this spring.
Now, he has a sodded lawn. So if he just seeds that one little patch, is it going to look funny or should he overseed the whole thing?
If you use just a Canada number one mix, it'll blend together. You won't even notice it.
Okay.
It'll
so look Canada different. Number
it'll,
one.
It'll look different when it first comes up because the young blades look different color. But then as it matures within a few weeks, you'll never notice.
And if with those yellow patches, raking it really well, getting some of that thatch out of there, if it's really bad, you can add some top dress on there too. The biggest one is
if it's new sod, is just put the fall fertilizer on.
Yeah.
That'll help it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. There you go. Let's go to the next text. This is from Sally, who's in Rostern. Is it too late to plant grass? This is the same kind of question. Backyard lawn facing east. What do you recommend, I guess?
Well, if you're going to put turf down, you can do it right up until the ground freezes.
Right.
And if you're going to seed, like I said, this weekend, this be still okay. But after that, then you wait until the middle of October and then it comes up in the spring or just wait till spring.
What we were saying is if you have irrigation, you can still do it. If you don't have irrigation, you're doing a larger area, you'll want to wait till later.
Next couple of days, I'm going to be seeding as well. So,
and there is a type of grass. Well, there's all kinds of places you can get grass.
Yep.
There also is one of our companies that we like to talk about is Ceres Industries and the fertilizer.
What's the fertilizer?
What's it called?
Groundkeeper.
Groundkeeper. Pardon me. Groundkeeper also makes grass seed now too, which is specific for our area.
There's Groundkeeper for our area. There's if you got dry land areas, which are acreages and farms and all that stuff, or sports fields, then the Early's Farm and Garden Center in Saskatoon has all they blend their own blends specifically for they supply most of the golf courses and parks in Saskatchewan.
They specialize in seed.
They specialize in blending grass seeds.
Right. Okay.
So if we're doing that kind of thing, if you're just looking for a Canada number one mix, you can pick that up anywhere.
Okay. Perfect. There you go, Sally. Let's go to the next text. Bernie in Saskatoon at 1-877-332-8255. I have an amaryllis that has been outside all summer. Nice long green leaves right now. How do I prep it to bloom for Christmas?
Okay. So you want to bring it indoors right away. Again, that's a tropical plant, so you don't want the frost to hit it. And then you can give it a cold spell if you want to. You'll probably need to move it in into like a cold storage area or make it go dormant a little bit. And it needs to stay dormant for 6 to 8 weeks.
Or even bring it in, if it's in a pot, bring it in for nighttime and put it out during the day.
Yeah.
That'll help prepare it as well for blooming.
It needs to get those colder evenings on it. And then you want to put it into cold storage for about 6 to 8 weeks and then bring it out and it will start blooming within 3 to 4 weeks after that.
Okay. And if it's in a pot, if just what you can do at the end of that 6 to 8 weeks, if you're in a cooler spot, then what you can do is pull it out of the pot and plant it back in the pot, same pot again, or put it in another size. If it's a bigger bulb, put in a little bit bigger pot, but not very much bigger. They like to be in a smaller pot. And then that will also trigger it. Just that transplanting it, even if it goes back in the same pot again, will trigger it to start putting this bloom up again.
Now, if you're having trouble with going dormant, you can also do what we do with the cannas and stuff, where you take them out of the pot, sort of lay them out and let it die back down into the bulb first, and then put it into a dormancy, cut the leaves off after they've sort of died back into the bulb, and then put it into a cold storage. Make sure if you're putting them to a crisp or a fridge, you don't have them near any fruits and vegetables.
No fruits or vegetables.
Okay. Perfect. Sharon in Saskatoon asks, how much should you be watering a lawn this time of year? Then she was asking, how do I dig up my canna lilies or wait till they have blooms? You know, they have blooms, or wait till they're still green. Do I wait or not? Right. We just talked about that. But,
So watering the grass, you should be everything you should be slowing down. It's not watering the same amount as you did, in the summertime, even though we're going to get 27 degrees this week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you said, it's only for a couple hours, right? It's going to be really warm.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the sun is not quite as intense. So you're still slowing down the watering, which will get the plant ready. And that's your shrubs, trees, everything. And then give it one last good watering when you're just before you're going to blow your sprinklers out.
Mm, right.
Okay.
And with your cannas, you can keep them outside until those temperatures or the hard frost hits them. And then you can dig them up and let them dry back into the bulb and store them
for
the winter.
Don't let the bulb freeze. The top can freeze, but don't let the bulb freeze.
Yeah.
This is the same question, like I think we're going to get a dozen times today, because Debbie is the next text from Regina. Advice on wintering canna lilies. Well, we just covered
that. Well, the cannas are so beautiful. And so everybody has them in their yard and they just want them to survive the next year, because every year you have cannas, they get bigger and bigger. Those plants and those blooms are going to get bigger every year. So it's really important to save them.
Right. Okay. This is from Wendy in Saskatoon. Do you have any idea what happened to the Swedish aspens and towering poplars this year? And I think Wendy may have given us a call already to talk about this. This is an earlier text. But basically a lot of them have got the boar.
What happened is that in the last bunch of years, we had a drought, right? And we have the drought, and those aspens, they need lots of water, and they need a lot of water, and they need nutrients. And people think when the tree's that big, they can take care of themselves. Well, not really, because we take all the nutrients away when we clean up our yards every year, right? Nature falls down. You ever walk in a bluff in a bush in the country? The whole ground is covered with leaf litter,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure, exactly.
Well, we clean all that up every year, so we take away all the nutrients. So we still have to add nutrients, keep them healthy. And that's the number one key with the trees. And in the drought the last bunch of years has made the trees stressed. I mean, look at even the spruce trees, how many acorns they got on this year.
Yeah,
they're all stressed.
Tons.
They're stressed like crazy. So, I mean, and that just attracts the boar and makes it go even more crazy. Even the boar just goes, this is perfect conditions for them.
Right. Okay. This is from Pat, and I'm going to probably pronounce this wrong, but I'll give it a shot. She said, good morning. I'd love to save my 3-foot, Diplodenia. What is that?
A Diplodenia, probably known it as a mandevilla vine.
Okay.
Okay. And so it's a tropical flowering plant. Again, like your tropicals, you'll want to bring them indoors when the nighttime temperature is hitting around 10 degrees. So you should have brought them in now. You'll want to cut them back though, because they are a vining plant. They get quite tall and aphids and spider mite love them.
So she says that her windows in her house faced east in Saskatoon. So how to winter it?
Okay. So she can put it in the east facing window. It's going to go dormant a little bit, maybe drop a few leaves. So you want to cut it back to about a third, spray it with some Endol, and you'll be wanting to check that every about 10 days.
Make sure all the flowers are taken off.
And chop it right back down, and then just decrease your watering a little bit when you're indoors, because it's not going to be getting as much sunlight. And then fertilize it maybe once a month and just keep it growing, and it will look beautiful next year.
Put it outside for next spring, or if you want to get it growing even more, then put some grow lights on it, you know, starting, you know, next March or something like that, and then get it growing quicker to be able to put outside in the long weekend in May.
Okay. This is the last text, and then we'll take a quick break. Sue is in Silver Park. I did cut down and harvest my oregano this summer. Now it's grown back and it's flowering again. To winter it, should I cut it back down or just leave it? I do cover it with a dense leaf mulch for the winter for protection. So it's back. What do you do now with it?
That's awesome. Most people can't get oregano to survive the winter outdoors. They have to bring it inside. So that's nice. She must have a nice microclimate. It's very important that she does mulch it well for the winter then in that area.
So she's doing that, but it's grown up. So do we cut it down now?
Yes, I would cut it down to maybe...
After the frost has hit it and made it go sort of a browny color, right?
Yeah. Okay. You can cut it down.
Then you cut it down.
It would be kind of like your perennial. It's not a shrub. So it'd be like your perennial. So you can cut it down and they'll grow back from the base every year. So you can either do that in the fall or the spring. But because I want as much leaves and everything to stay intact with the plant, I'd probably leave as many branches up as possible.
Okay. All right. Yep. We're going to take a quick break. Les in Corning, a call about calla lilies. Cheryl, who's in Rosetown, wants to talk about some peat moss questions. So we'll get back to that right after this. And then, of course, more texts. I'm Jay Thomas with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Another beautiful day, beautiful weekend and a week ahead. Welcome back to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. I'm Jay Thomas with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. We've got text to get to.
And?
Oh, and what?
And Bo.
And Bo. Well, you can't hear him, but Jill's youngest.
I have my 7-year-old here with me in the studio today, so he's helping us out with the gardening questions in the background.
Let's not lie. He's on his iPad right now.
Okay. Researching gardening questions.
Oh, sure.
Questions.
Yes. Sure. Okay. We've got text to get to in a second. We'll do that coming up. But we're going to go out right now to Corning and talk to Les, who's waiting on the phone. Hi there, Les.
Good morning, and a wonderful morning it is for a fall morning.
Yeah, isn't it?
Beautiful.
Isn't it?
And I hope the farmers can get back out after a little sprinkle of rain and get back harvesting.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, and calla lily, I called you back in May about this. Now, I can't remember quite if you said once it dies off in the fall, whether it goes through the dormancy and it comes back or that plant is officially done.
The callas are a bulb that you have to bring indoors for the winter. So you bring them inside, put them through a dormant stage indoors, and then you can plant them back up in February and then have them blooming again for next spring.
Once the top dies down, gets a bit of frost, you can actually bring just the bulb in. So you don't have to, you can just store the bulbs. You don't have to grow a plant or nothing in the house. You can just store them in a cool place and then fire them back up again in March if you want to get them ready for the next year.
Oh, that's a calla lily,
yep.
Right?
Yes. Calla or canna, both the same way.
Yep, same story.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's perfect. And I thank you very much.
Thanks no problem. For your call.
Take care, Les.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, 1-877-332-8255. Going to Rosetown right now to talk to Cheryl. Hi there, Cheryl.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You're on to talk about peat moss. Is that correct?
I do. I want to know if something new called coco cork is a replacement for peat moss, and is it fire retardant?
No.
No?
Both of them. I have instances in cases where we put peat moss. Even one time we put peat moss in front of ground mulch in front of a condo complex. And yeah. we had to actually take it all out because people were throwing their cigarette butts out into the garden beds as they walked into the buildings, and we had a little fire starting in the beds.
Oh, I can imagine.
So, but coco fire would be the same way. It'd be flammable if you just left it as a mulch. But if you work it into the soil, it's not going to be bad.
One thing is it does absorb a lot of moisture. So it would have to be quite dry in order for it to be flammable. But it comes in a nice solid brick form, and it is a great substitute for, and a lot more sustainable substitute for peat moss.
Good. That's what I'd like to use.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It works really well. It's become very, very popular now.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Cheryl. Take care.
You bet. Have a great day.
1-877-332-8255. We should clarify what coco core actually is for somebody who said, you know, oh, Well, Cheryl says it's a new product. What is it exactly?
CocoCore is a product that's made out of the husk from a coconut, and it is kind of compacted and
cocoa beans,
and
right?
Cocoa beans and compressed together, and it's sort of in a compact, and you add water to it, and it expands, and you can use it to hold moisture in your garden.
So when you pick up a coconut at the grocery store, it's sort of that hairy, fuzzy stuff on the outside of a coconut, right?
Yep.
That or other parts of the plant.
Or the cocoa beans, right?
Or the cocoa beans, right?
Cocoa beans, they use that a lot from that as well, because most of it comes from more cocoa beans than coconuts, I believe.
Okay.
And but one thing they're starting to look at them for is because in a lot of places in Europe, they're starting to look at banning using of peat moss.
Well, peat moss has to be harvested out of specific places, right?
Well, it's taken out of peat bogs, right?
Peat bogs,
and
yes.
So they're saying that, of course, with the harvesting peat bogs, you're extracting the carbon capture that's in those peat moss. So that's why they're starting to look at, in Europe, they're looking at banning it, right?
Well, and it takes a long time for that peat bog to recover, right? It's a natural habitat for a lot of other animals and plants and things too.
Yeah. So, whereas, you know, from the cocoa plant it's harvested and grown and so it's more, you know, more
sustainable.
Sustainable.
More that's right.
Renewable.
Renewable. Guess. Yeah. Easy to come by, right? Yeah. So is it coconut or is it cocoa?
It's the coconut husk.
Is it the coconut husk? Yeah, so it's we're just trying to figure that out.
Yeah, so it's the husk that is kind of ground up. It's all the leftovers that they use, and they kind of put it all together, and that's what you get the CocoCore. So it's a really sustainable way of using those extras.
Yeah.
When farming.
When you feel it, it does feel like that fuzzy outside of a coconut.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
It's that kind of brown, hairy stuff.
Yeah.
Mix it in and away you go. Okay, so let's go back to the text line. 1-877-332-8255. This is from Will, who's or William in Regina. How can you tell when watermelons are ready to eat?
Well, when watermelons are ready to eat, when I'm picking my watermelon out of the bin in the grocery store, I will look for a nice green, but then it has a little bit of a patch of yellow on it.
Yep.
And that's when you know that it's ready and it's nice and sweet inside.
There is, I'm trying to find it on my phone right now, but I even found a guide to picking watermelons, and it was like a little picture.
So, you know,
pictogram.
When you used to like see grandma knocking on the watermelon, that actually doesn't really do much.
No.
it's more looking at like the overall size of the watermelon. So if it's really tiny and you know you planted a bigger watermelon, that would be a sign. But if it's green, but then it has a little bit of yellow on it, that's what you're looking for.
That's what you're looking for. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's the same guide for picking for a watermelon in your garden that you've grown.
Exactly.
Right.
You got to remember, watermelons right now are putting all their size on right now. So covering them in nighttime is huge for making I had a friend of mine that grew 17 pound watermelons, and that's because he put the crop cover on in starting at the end of August.
Yep.
And he put them on every night and then took it off during the daytime, and he got 17 pound watermelons.
Holy.
And sometimes if you have a smaller patch, you can even throw a blanket on to keep it even warmer than even a crop cover.
So it still needs light during the day, so you had to take it off or put, using a, you know, a crop cover less light through, but I mean, it's important.
We've got a text that's a very interesting one. We haven't gotten texts about this very often. Looks like Judy's got a couple of texts. She says, when is the best time to prune a cherry tree?
Cherry trees, I like pruning them when they're dormant.
Okay.
So as soon as the leaves turn color or start dropping, you can prune them in the fall, or you can prune them in March or the first week of April.
And then the other question is, I have a huge tobacco plant. The top is what looks like full of lice, little tiny bugs.
So that's most likely she's got aphids in there.
Yeah.
And a tobacco plant, also Nicotiana is the name of the plant. So a beautiful flowering annual. They aren't a plant that's going to survive the winter. So, you can enjoy them for as long as you can and then pull them out and start over again next year.
Okay.
Unless she has a real tobacco plant that she has inside the house. So.
Right.
But same thing, it'd be aphids.
It would be aphids. You can cut that plant down if it's an indoor house
plant.
And
then you also could also use indole on it as well, if he has a real tobacco plant.
Marion Watrous had texted us earlier about a hydrangea, but she has another question about hydrangea. Can I prune it down to reduce its size?
Yes.
And I don't have to prune it right now because all the flower heads are on it, right?
Only hydrangeas I like to only take, once the flowers are done, okay, they're all frozen, I'll cut the flower heads off only.
Yes.
Okay, just so that they don't get the snow on them and weight down, because some of the flowers are pretty big, okay?
Yeah.
I don't do any other trimming until spring, because I want those branches to catch as much snow as possible to give them much protection as possible.
Yes.
Then what I will, as soon as the snow disappears in April, then I go and trim it back at least a third to a half.
Right. Okay.
And then I'll get a lot more blooms the next year.
Okay. Perfect. So yes, the answer is yes. But like Rick said, yep. Springtime.
I think that's really important what you said about trimming them a little bit in the fall, because mine I didn't in the front and the snow fall on them and I had so many broken branches in the spring.
And that's why I take the, so heavy. That's why I take the heads off for, and it just makes a huge difference so it doesn't knock them over.
Good idea. I got to do that this year.
Yeah. Okay. Willa is in Regina. I purchased Heart of the Jungle this spring. What is Heart of the Jungle? Thought it was something else, but I'm pleased with the outcome of this strange plant. There are tentacle-like things coming out of the soil. New growth? Question mark. I have to save it for next year, but not sure how to winter it. So we're just digging into that right now because that's a kind of an unusual plant, right?
So it's a type of colocasia. So it's a big like elephant ear, called Heart of the Jungle. And so it is grown as a bulb. You can bring them indoors and enjoy them as a house plant. But just like your canna lilies, you'll want to follow the same process. Let it die back down into the bulb and then save the bulb for the winter.
Yep.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We've got a text coming up from Jane in Humboldt, Judy, who's in Echo Lake, Wendy in White City, Kathy in Duck Lake, David in Indian Head, and a few more after that yet. So stick around. We're going to get all those answers for you right away. You can join the conversation at 1-877-332-8255. I'm Jay Thomas with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Well, the fall colors are here. It's a beautiful afternoon. Well, I guess it's not quite afternoon yet. Morning, and good morning to you. I'm Jay Thomas with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. We've got lots of text to get to keep going with. You can join the conversation at 1-877-332-8255. Okay, this one is from Jane in Humboldt. Is it too late to move perennial flower plants right now?
No, it's not. I do prefer moving them when they are dormant, so either late fall or early spring, and preferably with our harsh winters because we don't know what our snowfall is like. I would do it early spring.
Yep.
But
if you're going to move them, you need to mulch them heavy for this first winter.
And try and take as big of a root ball as possible.
Okay. All right. Judy is in Echo Lake. Good morning. We've got two huge bleeding hearts that were great this year in our front garden bed. How should we prepare them for the winter? Trimming them back or just leave them? Again, this is Echo Lake.
Yeah. What I'd probably do is trim them back just a little bit, but leave most of the branches up because you want the snowfall to catch on them. And then I would trim down my bleeding hearts to the ground in the early spring.
Yeah, or if you're going to trim them out in the fall, wait till the frost hits them and knocks them down really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is from Wendy, who's in White City. The forsythia we have has gotten too big. What's the best way to prune it and when?
Okay, when it's dormant in the fall.
Yep.
So basically you're going to be doing toward the end of October, or you can do it in the first thing in the spring as soon as the snow disappears. But the problem with, you got to remember with forsythia, it puts its blooms on basically the first thing. As soon as the snow disappears, they start to flower almost. So before the leaves come on.
Right.
So they set their buds in the fall. So you do a major pruning or any type of pruning on them, what'll happen is that you'll cut all the blooms off. So you would miss, if you do a major pruning, you're going to miss 1 year most of blooms, okay? And if you do a major, major pruning, it takes about 2 years to get the blooms back.
So blooming them after they bloomed in the spring is the best.
So pruning them after they finish blooming for light pruning, but it sounds like hers is out of control.
Yeah.
So she wants to do a major pruning, so you're going to be missing the flowers for a couple of years.
Right, right.
Okay.
Same thing if you do a lilac, right? The same idea, right?
Same
thing. Yeah, okay. This is from Kim, who's in Saskatoon. I have a question about fall overseeding. You talked about how you can still do that now. If I spread the seed, do I water it now as well? So
yes.
This is kind of where in that zone, though, right?
In the zone, if you got to get it, do it right away, like because we still have some warm weather, they still germinate, because it still takes 5 days or so, 7 days to germinate. But otherwise, we're getting very close to the time where I would wait till the middle of October and then put it overseed. And then it'll come up first thing in the spring.
The thing I worry about, if you get seed to germinate now and you get grass, that if it's really new, tender grass, then we get a whole bunch of hard frost, which we don't know could, will that just knock it down and kind of ruin the progress anyways?
It could. A lot of the grass, depending on how, like I said, we could have a great fall yet. I mean, most likely you might lose a little bit of your grass, but if you get a good take right now with this warm 27 degrees coming up this week, if you get it this weekend, if it's not going to be this weekend, then I'd suggest wait until the middle of October.
And they're projecting for lots of snow this year, so.
Yep. Well, that's good. As long as it comes before the really cold temperatures come.
Yep.
There's like so many ifs with this is doing this. So
if only we had a crystal ball.
Exactly. So I don't know. I guess not that I'm some expert like you guys are, but I almost feel like you're better off to just not put it down yet. Wait till that middle of October.
If you're overseeding into other grass.
Right. If you're overseeding into other grass. But if you're starting a whole fresh new lawn on soil.
I would wait.
You'd wait, right? So if you're overseeding on a lawn that's got grass already, you want to kind of thicken it up. Yeah, you can do that now. If you've just got, you're trying to start a new lawn, you're probably not going to have success, right? You'll get it to come up. It'll be all tender and nice and green. And then something will happen. We'll get hard frost. We'll get, you know, no snow covering an area. You'll just undo all the work you did.
I'm just looking at a long-term forecast right now. And right to October the 4th, it's still 16 degrees.
Right.
So, that's amazing.
That is amazing. You know, good.
I'm going, okay, now I go to October the 9th. It's still 12 degrees. You know, 6 at 7 at night.
Right.
So, I mean, we still got a couple weeks where it's still going to be pretty nice.
Okay. Yep. All right.
As long as you can keep it irrigated.
And that's the key, right? That's the key for
most
Kim.
People are going to start blowing the sprinklers out pretty quick here, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true too. So. We'll talk about that in a little bit when we get through the rest of the text. Kathy in Duck Lake, we got half of your text. If you want to resend the rest of it, we can help you out with that. David, who's an Indian head of us, says, I got a 5-year-old cherry tree. It grew like crazy this year. Yep. New branches are like 3 feet long. I'm worried that an early snow will break it to pieces. Can I prune it now before it snows, or do I have to wait till next spring?
No, just wait a little bit longer until the leaves turn color at least. Then you can prune them.
Okay.
Okay.
So just leaves turn color, then you can trim it back.
Yep.
Okay, perfect.
Not a problem.
This is from Crystal in Sarah's, sorry, I think that's the right way to say that name. But anyways, my son-in-law just laid turf this weekend. How often should I water it? Yep. Rick said to start, you know, cutting back on lawn watering, but if it's a new sod like that, what do we do?
Keep it moist. I want it to root, okay? So keep it moist, and you don't have to water it as much as you would in the summertime because it's not going to dry out as quickly, but keep it moist right up until the time when you shut your sprinklers down for the winter.
Right.
Okay, and then after that, then not much you can do, right?
So just keep watering it, basically.
Keep watering
it until you got to shut the sprinklers off, and then when we're good to go.
Yep.
Colleen, who is in Moose Jaw, says, I've got two tiny asparagus plants that popped up in my garden this fall. What can I do to assure they survive the winter?
Yeah. Your asparagus are pretty tough as nails, so you can just sort of leave them there. Don't cut back their sprouts, though. That's one thing that's really important if they're new. You want to keep those up, and just you can put a little bit of mulch around them if you want to. Yeah. But
if you want to mulch them in case we get a brown Christmas, you know, you can always throw a little mulch on them for the first year. Otherwise, you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is an interesting text from Diane, who's in Kamsack. Digging out potatoes this weekend. Pretty good crop, but potato bugs are still pretty active, both young and old. So she wants to know, will they be there when I plant in the spring? Do I have to plant somewhere else? How do I deal with them now so they don't make it till next year so we can have a good crop?
So you always rotate your ground crops no matter what, okay? So you plant at a different location every year if you can in the garden. What I suggest, and we had a caller talk about that, after every second plant or every third plant, plant an onion.
Yes. An onion plant. Not just a piece of onion
in
the ground.
If you have a small garden, do it after every second one. You're going to plant onions anyways, right?
Right.
So plant them in between your potatoes. He said when he did that, he got no potato bugs.
Yep, they were not there.
Remember how we said, taking a slice of onion? Well, I like the idea way better of planting an onion in between.
Exactly.
Because now I'm actually growing my onions. I have to grow them somewhere anyways, and they'll keep away the potato bugs.
So, Diane, move your crop for next year. Okay. Well, is there anything to do with taking care of them now? And you can pick them and kill them, right?
Yeah, you can pick them and still kill them right now. Yeah, get rid of them.
As much as you can.
As much as you can, because they'll hibernate in the soil, right?
Okay.
And so you will have them next year. But next year, do what you can. Either do the spraying, or the best thing to do, because it's hard to spray because you got the bees coming around, all that kind of stuff. So plant the onions between.
Okay.
Sounds like a plan for me.
Yeah, I think so. Just move the crop, onions in between, and you should be good to go.
Yep.
They're hibernating about 20 centimeters under the soil. So it's fairly deep. So it's not even like, oh, if I remove all like the branches and leaves and everything, I'm going to get rid of them. They're actually in the soil.
Once they're there, they're there, right? Yeah. But keeping those onions planted will chase them away. They won't want to be there.
They won't want to be there.
So they'll go somewhere else. So they'll just wither away, right? Okay. Yep. All right. This is from Jace. So good morning, guys. Love the show. My name is Jace, calling from Regina. Just wondering, I fertilized my potted chive plant at the start of September, and about a week after that, most of it turned yellow. Is it possible that I over-fertilized it or used the wrong type? Will it come back? It looks like it's pretty much done. Or it might be pretty much done. Is it done?
He said in a container, he said, right?
Yeah. So chive plant, and it's potted. Yeah. So fertilized it. It went yellow. Is it done? Will it come back? What can I do to fix it?
Yeah.
Chives do not like a lot of fertilizer. So that's one thing that you have to watch with chives. They like sort of a light organic fertilizer. So using like the alfalfa pellets or using like a fish fertilizer or something like that is best. If you're just using a straight NPK fertilizer like a Miracle-Gro, it's not the best one for chives.
I got chives out in the garden in the middle of their acreage, and I just planted them, and they just started. They only got over. I never fertilized them, nothing. They just got over. They got pretty sandy soil.
Yep.
And they just got oversprayed from the sprinklers on the lawn, and they just kept spreading these crazy things. They kept
Of a plant that you don't, we talk about lots of plants that need
nutrients.
They don't really need a lot.
Don't need a lot.
No.
They're also a little bit sensitive to pH, so having a consistent pH. So you might have fertilized it and that made the pH go out of whack on your chives too, and that's what turned them yellow.
So what can he do?
Well, making sure that your pH is staying around six or seven.
6.5 to 7. So you may, depending on your water and everything else, you may have to add a little bit of aluminum sulfate to the soil.
Okay.
Most likely
the potted plant.
Is.
Yep. Yep. Okay.
And I said, just use an organic fertilizer. Don't use a 20-20-20 or anything like that because that's just too strong of a nitrogen. And just an organic, which is only like one or two nitrogen, three, four in that range. And then, but all your micronutrients for like a vegetable fertilizer has.
Yeah. Should he just like take the potted plant right now and try to flush out everything? Should he over water it right now and kind of get it to drain through?
It's tricky with the chives because they like to be a little bit on the drier side.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a tricky one. You just sort of will watch it, let it leach through a little
obviously
bit.
Obviously, you have to bring it indoors if he has it in a pot, right?
Right.
So he's going to have to bring it indoors because it's not going to survive in that pot for the wintertime, or he has to plant the chive into the ground.
Yeah, and make sure you give it lots of light when you bring it indoors, too.
Okay. Let's take a quick break. We're going to get back to the rest of the text, and we get back from the break. We've got a text about Saskatoon bush from Donna in Saskatoon, talking about a bougainvillea with Lynn in North Battleford, and many more after that. So stick around. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. It is the lightning round here on Garden Talk. We've just got a few more texts to get to. Can't believe the show is just about over. 2 hours goes by so quick.
Really fast.
Yeah, it really does. I'm Jay Thomas with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. We've got some texts to answer. So here we go. This is Jane. I tried the potato bug trick of working the soil as late as possible. No potato bugs at all this year. So this is, we're talking about potato bugs earlier. Mm-hmm. She said she worked in the soil as late as possible, early November.
Yep.
And then there was no potato bugs.
Yeah. So she disturbed them up to the top, right?
Yep.
And then they froze up.
And then they froze, right?
Yep.
Pulled them up back up, basically rototilled them to the top, right? Yep. So that does cut down their numbers. Instead
awesome.
Of being hibernated down, like you said, quite a far down into the soil where they are protected, bring them up to the top, they freeze.
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
Thanks for the tip.
Yeah. Great. Donna is in Regina. When can I cut back my Mugo pines, and where on the trees do I cut them? I need to cut about 2 feet off of each of them.
Okay, so you can do it now. Pines are great to do prune right now because otherwise they'll bleed if you prune them in the spring. So same as the birches and maples right now. So you only want to prune a Mugo pine so you still see green. If you just have sticks and no green anymore, then it'll take forever for them to come back.
Okay.
Like a lot of years, not just months and years. Okay,
yeah, that's right.
So prune them back is what you want, but just make sure you still see green, and then next year start fertilizing and get them to fill out again.
Okay, Kathy's in Duck Lake. Hi guys, we want to cut some larger limbs from the bottom of a linden tree. They're around 3 inches in diameter.
Yep.
When can we do this? We don't want to damage this beautiful tree.
Yep. So you can pretty much do it as soon as leaves are starting to turn color pretty soon on the lindens. So as soon as the leaves turn color, you can do it up until basically the middle of November. And then I usually stop, and then I usually will start pruning again in March or the first week of April.
All right. Let's see. We've got Tracy, and this is a question about pruning snowballs. So that's verbenum, right?
Verbenum, yep.
So when to prune those?
When to prune them, you can prune the snowballs. They're the same thing as like the hydrangeas where they'll bloom a lot on their new wood.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so you can prune them again in the fall or the spring. It doesn't matter. Just prune them back basically about a third.
Mm-hmm.
And then get lots of new growth, and then you get lots of blooms.
She also asks or says that she's been battling fire lily bugs, since the lilies were planted.
Yes.
What can she do to ensure that the eggs are killed? I sprayed several times with Ambush and picked them and the eggs, but they always seem to come back. What can we do done to prevent that?
Just going to have to keep on top of it. You have to do spray program about every 10 days. Don't hit the flowers, okay? But you have to spray the bottom side of the leaves. That's where the beetles are. If you just spray the top of the leaves, you're not going to do anything. And then doing the same thing, being vigilant about looking underneath the leaves, and you'll see those little clusters of orange eggs, and just picking those off.
Okay. All right. Colin, who's in Manor, Saskatchewan, says or asks that he's just wondering if he understood correctly that when we said that when we add pine mulch to soils, it can actually bring the pH down a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true, that's right?
Yep.
It's not going to lower it drastically.
Nope.
It will take time as things break down, those sort of thing,
but
right?
Your garden will do way better if you get your pH to neutral, okay, which is around 7.
Right. Okay, so that pine mulch will help with that.
Yep, it'll exactly. help with that. But the biggest thing it'll do is it'll just basically make it so that your garden doesn't get so hard.
Okay.
Right.
George in Saskatoon, can I still apply fall lawn fertilizer? And is it important to water it in or do you just leave it in on top?
No, water it in.
Water it in.
And we like using the Groundskeeper one. It's the same one that you use all the time. It's the same formula.
You can use it for spring, summer, and fall. You don't have to get all different types of fertilizer. So if you have some left over, you can use it summer, or some left over, you can use it in the fall. That's what I like about the Groundskeeper fertilizer.
Are you putting it in on the fall, though, so that you water it in? Is the idea to water it in to keep the lawn green? Because don't you want do you want the lawn to shut down? Or
What will happen is it also strengthen the roots.
Okay. Yeah,
especially in the fall, the one that has a bit of phosphorus in it. If you have a little weak lawn, the phosphorus will help strengthen the roots so the roots go down and then get them ready for next spring.
And I'm also, because I always get snow mold on my front lawn, I'm going to do a sulfur spray this year.
Yep, there you go.
A sulfur spray, okay.
Yep. If you get snow mold, to put a sulfur spray or even a copper sulfate, even better. And
A Bordeaux.
Bordeaux, what is their name for it.
Is there any problem, though, with a lawn going into the cold stuff that's still green, though? Is that okay?
No, yeah. As long as you get a good snow cover over it. Lawn is pretty tough, you know. It's not like a tree or shrub where if you go green and it goes, the lawn can take it a bit better.
So that's okay if it's quite green and then it goes into the into the snow that way. Yeah. Okay.
Because one thing nice about grass is that as soon as the snow does come, it's covered.
All right. This is Bonnie, who's in Saskatoon. Says, I haven't had success with bringing in my dahlia tubers. How should I prep them, store them for winter?
Well, there's a few ways. You can bring them in and keep them in the pot that they're in if you have enough space for that. Otherwise, what I would do is if you haven't had success with storing them, you might want to bring them in and let the stalks or the leaves die back down into the bulb first and then cut them and store them. And I usually store them in either some coco core or some sawdust and in an open crate or a paper bag. Don't put them in a plastic bag.
If you put a plastic bag, then you have to perforate it like lots.
Yeah, there's also some bulb dust that you can get, which is just almost like a sulfur powder that you can put on your bulbs, and that will help them from rotting and keeping them nice and firm for you.
And last text we can get on the air here from Laura in Saskatoon. I have several orchids in the house. I'm finding that there's a fine cobwebs on them today while watering them. Don't think they were there last week. Wondering what I should be doing or concerned about.
If you think the fine cobwebs might be a spider mite instead of just a regular house spider, you can use Endol on them, which is just insecticidal soap with pyrethrin and canola oil in there, and just do a nice spray on them and then repeat that in 10 days.
Just don't hit the flowers.
And my orchid is like...
Yeah, you're the orchid king now.
It's coming back again. Like amazing. The new brack is growing up and it's going to split double off in two sections. I don't know why. It just seems to do that.
You almost seem to get a bloom nonstop.
It never stops. It's never stopped blooming.
It's amazing. You have a perfect spot for it.
I don't know. I guess so.
How are you fertilizing it again?
Just that liquid...
Orchid food.
Orchid fertilizer every time I water it. Every time.
And bright light.
All year round. It lives on the coffee table, on a glass coffee table in a south-facing window. So not right in the window, but in the bright...
But lots of bright light.
And then the glass probably reflects from the bottom
up. Keeps it nice and warm.
Too, right? Yeah.
There you go.
I don't know. It just keeps going. Thanks for listening today. We're going to take we got to wrap up the show because this is the end. But if you didn't get your text on the air, we'll text you back off the air. Thanks again. We'll see you same time, same place next weekend.
Yes.
Enjoy the fall color.
Yeah, get out there and take a look at all these fall colors.
I'm Jay Thomas with Jill and Rick Van Dyvendyke. Thanks for listening to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.